see if I can find some place to hide in the corner here. Okay, thank you. The title does include bays, and some people know that my full disposition isn't in the Bayesian sphere, so this is not about a barrier between Bayesian and frequentist. I think that's easy. It's about the real barrier, the high-dimensional one, and that enters into both what Bayesians do and frequentists do. Of course, thanks to EJAZ for organizing things, and to Peter and Muju and the supporting organizations. I must have left some out because there's some significant absences there, but that's what was available on the website. And thanks to Bayes, because there are people who have feelings one way or the other about Bayes, but he's had profound effects, and those effects are current. And I'm fresh from a meeting that just happened to be in Crete, which was prominently Bayesian, so whether or not I was converted is a question you can judge. So the high-dimensional barrier, there was a first encounter I had, and I'll just mention that lightly. The barrier occurs in different ways. It occurs in sort of data analysis and processing, as you all know. It also occurs in the model-based context, and my emphasis will be on the latter, although that has influences on the other. What turns out to be crucial in distinguishing and addressing the barrier is the gradient of the prior, which sounds like something dumb, taking the gradient of the prior, but it's something that you can calculate, and it does significantly indicate what a prior is doing. And if you use a prior, you should know what it's doing. And you see so many talks where there's a pile of priors called something else, and there's no addressing what those are doing to the basic model structure. Part of doing that is being able to standardize the theta and the parameter space, and that is something that has significant implications. All of it goes back to Welch and Pierce, and that's a paper that's not 1763, which was when Bayes, it was 1963. So some things do happen slowly in statistics. That is a Bayesian theme there. So that gradient you do need to fine-tune, and then I'll try to summarize things, and that you need to check your prior, and there are risks inherent on that. So kind of a theme of how things work in terms of the two is you can slice through something or you can try to bridge over it. So this is kind of picturing the barrier. So the two themes, slicing and bridging it, and part of that is sort of having things calibrated so you can see them conceptually and perhaps do that computationally. So the first encounter, and apologies, I won't count back to when my first encounter with the problem was. And it was a time when important sampling it emerged as really being maybe the solution to many things, or all things, depending on a point of view. And I had a modest problem with eager graduate students, so why not try it out? Well, it was spectacular. You know how important sampling grows. You get a sample value, and there's a weight that goes with it. Call it a weight or call it an importance. What it really is in more likelihood-based theory, it's a likelihood ratio. So it looked nice for a while. You get your yi's, and then you look at the weights. So 70%, 150%. And then along comes one that's 3 × 10⁵. Well, what would that mean? It means that everything that you had before, you might as well throw out. You got something that's really significant as far as importance is going. Well, I was away in a sabbatical a while after that, and a grad student, another one, he's been on staff, and he continued working on it. I'll be so bold as to say he broke the barrier, and it was Keith Hastings. That's the Hastings of the Metropolis Hastings. But the problem is the barrier was still there, just incrementally farther away, a little farther away. And, of course, that barrier in dealing it is why we're all here. The barrier, just handling masses of data or handling massive models, it's real. And what are you trying to do? You want to bring the dimension down so things are manageable. If you think of doing that on the data space, the way that managed most on data space is major conditioning. And that would be thought of as slice through the data space. It leads to asymptotics in the simple sense, the use of Laplace often. If you think of doing it in the whole model space, you can slice it there, and that is you have a product space, each huge dimension, and you come in and say, I've got a data value, I'm going to forget about everything and just look at that slice through the data space. Again, it leads, if you're analyzing things, to massive MCMC and also to asymptotic matter. So what do I mean by slice in the data space? You have your statistical model, you plug in your data, that's your likelihood, and you throw everything else away. That's Bayes. Bayes in a very significant sense. When I think of bridging that asymptotic, this aspect of asymptotics where you come back from infinity by really, in a practical sense, taking derivatives at infinity. First derivative, a second derivative, back from infinity, and that can provide profound information. So just focusing in on the gradient of the prior, which I did mention, if you look up there on the left, you see a sample space. I just suggested that two-dimensionally, I'll call the 150-dimensional easily. And so an obvious point to look at it, consistent with Bayes, of course, is where your MLE value, that's where the mass of the likelihood or the height of the likelihood is maximized. So if you think of the prior above that, plotted above it, of course you can go up to that point and then maybe look at what the slope of the prior is at that point, or take the gradient of the prior. I've switched to taking the gradient of the logarithm for obvious reason, because the prior, it's free to a multiplicative constant, so you need to go and look at percentage change, which is given by the gradient of the logarithm. So picture this now as the log prior that's up there, and look at the gradient. What does it tell you? Well, I'll claim it tells you a lot. It tells you things of the second order, and somehow going to the second order can give profoundly more information. So take a very, very, very simple case where you can see what's going on. It's better to know what happens in the simple case before you leap into 1,000 dimensions and you don't see what's being done. Suppose your likelihood is nice and just plain normal for the sake of argument. You come in and look at your prior, and I was talking about it on the log scale, but I've represented it here. That's looking at it linear, locally linear in the log scale as it becomes an exponential tilt. And we know what happens if you modulate the normal by an exponential tilt. It's quadratic and linear, and you put them together, and all it does is take the normal and displace it. So the gradient of the prior is fundamentally going to be shifting the likelihood, and you want to know how to actually see that in a big complex problem. In a big problem with a bit of regularity that's widely available, you can pick up a bias, and we'll need something more, so I just refer to that as calibrating the parameter. So part of calibrating the parameter is, well, starting up, why don't I see the red coming out? It's burning my finger there. The model, assume a bit of regularity and that you're working in the neighborhood of your data point. Standardize, this is obviously kind of standardizing you do. You go to the significant point and look at departures from it, the MLE, observed MLE, and there's a Hessian at that point, so that's an observed information, the parameterization, so you rescale departures from theta naught in terms of that. And that actually leads, if you do it right, to approximate exponential family, which allows you to do a lot of analysis, really using much more of your original model than you would normally do. So if you look at what the observed likelihood after you've recentered and rescaled, it's going to be normal-like, but n minus a half stuff left over. The log prior, if you look at it, is going to be a constant times the departure, standardized departure, and that's going to be n to the minus a half. So as far as the prior, if you can calculate this, you need to know a little bit more about the likelihood to know what happens when you combine those. So I'll refer to that as linearization, how theta affects the model near the data point, and that turns out to be crucial. So the way you find that is by differentiate the model, and there's something kind of curious when you say differentiate the model, because everybody's kind of, what, you're going to differentiate the data point with respect to the parameter? Well, you can actually do that. You don't work with a distribution function, which we normally do. You can work with a density function, differentiate with respect to the parameter, and that gives you score type things which are powerfully useful. You just put the model in quantile form and say, I want to differentiate it with respect to the parameter. So a parameter change actually can push the data if you have coordinate by coordinate and other kind of regularity. So differentiate the data with respect to SAM sounds like nonsense. But if you differentiate and put the data in, then you get some powerful result. That thing is going to be n by p, as I indicated there. And what it says is the change at your data point is an n by p matrix times a change in the parameter at some point theta. Well, it'd be much nicer if you didn't work on the original data space, but worked on the MLE space. And you can actually go from V theta to V bar by just using observed information and a cross Hessian. And that's fairly straightforward. So then you could rewrite a change in the observed MLE at your data. How does it relate to the change in the parameter at various parameter values? And this is easy, and it's fairly generally easily. And what it leads to, it says there's a location reparameterization of theta. Locally it's linear, but you can get your handle on the quadratic effect, and that quadratic effect W is the gradient of the V at the observed MLE. So this is picking up a gradient as far as likelihood effects is concerned, how the parameter influences the data. This looks like a Taylor expansion, linear and quadratic it is. The thing about it is beta and theta are vectors, so when I do this theta W theta, that's a quadratic expression, but the elements of W are vectors themselves. So I'm mixing notation so I don't get into tensors. But that's available quite generally. And so what it says is, well, with that kind of parameterization, you can actually think of a location model in the neighborhood of the data. What the model looked like locally in the neighborhood of the data. And this is getting a general version of what I had back in the beginning. It was just a simple normal, and I tilt it. And you can get ON minus a half result, and you can see what's there. That is, provided you do all these calculations. To get the age, you don't have to do that, to get the offset. So what it means is you get the log likelihood, and it's quadratic because the initial scaling, and then you can get into the cubic effect. So this is simple-minded cubic, because these are cubic in a vector parameter. Where does it go back to? It goes back to Welsh and Pierce, so that was like 200 years after Bayes. And what he was doing was picking up on something that Jefferies had proposed, the Jefferies prior, the root information prior. And what he looked at was really, what they looked at was just the scalar exponential model. If you're on the real line with a real parameter, nothing could be simpler unless it turned out to be a contraction of that, which would be a normal. So you have something that gets tilted. That's what this is doing, a tilting. There's a cumulative generating function like that. And what was being looked at by Welsh and Pierce was to use root information, and so that goes back to what Jefferies did, and actually take the Hessian and look at it. If you're in an exponential model, and this is looking at an exponential, that's the same as the information in the expected sense, but this is looking at the observed information. And what they showed was that if you want confidence interval, you could use Bayes, or put it another way, Bayes gets a reprieve. It's demonstrably okay because it fits with constant confidence. As I mentioned, I came from a Bayesian meeting, and I wouldn't dare speak quite like this there. You can go a little bit deeper and say, well, I've got this reweighting or topologizing or rescaling on the parameter space. So if I integrate up, I'll get a beta theta, and that's called a constant information reparameterization Gibbs location model. This is all in the real line. It's there, and the rest of it, it's cute, the rest of it. And everybody knows that root information doesn't work when you go vector. That goes to the general vector priors, and he went into modifications of those. They sometimes work, and it's a sweat still in the Bayesian community. So what you can do is extend this to regular models, just ones that are amenable to asymptotics. So I'm looking at the vector case there. I still have this Z, which is what the how the data is influenced by the parameter. So what I do is I look at the likelihood and differentiate it in those directions. In other words, I got a likelihood function in a huge space. Differentiating in the data space would be give you a lot of nonsense. But there are these crucial directions where things happen. And then you can come along and say, I just treat that as an exponential model in that parameterization. Sounds like it wouldn't work, but it does work to third order. You can get p-values. I put p of 5, but that isn't quite true as it stands. That's p of any scalar parameter. You get third order. So accurate that you get if you're able to do an MCMC and want to integrate it, you have to go to 10 to 50 million iterations to get the accuracy of this if you have anything like moderate regularity. But you also get, as I mentioned before, the linear parameters, that W, which is the derivative of the V of theta at the data point. It gives you a quadratic effect. Well, this is P by P by P in effect, so it's sort of like tensor thing. I've written as P by P with vector components, and there's background of this in the recent Biometrica article, and more recently, last year, and then several others that I could mention. Well, if you think of the prior, you have to think about maybe fine-tuning that. I talked about centering and standardizing, but you have to do a little bit more because of that potential linearity. Of course, the prior, you can expand it. The log prior, it's going to be linear. There's a vector A. That's fine, but what you need to know is get something that goes along with it. So your likelihood function is quadratic, but then you get the third-order garbage. What happens if you think of going to the linear parameterization beta? If you go to the linear parameterization beta, it says that the likelihood generally is this quadratic thing, and then the cubic is translated to. Now, there are some fine-tuning of that. This is direct translation from your data point, but the asymptotics carries through. So if you think of putting those together, the log prior and the log likelihood, put them together, it's combining quadratics with a linear term, so that gives the offset, but the actual cubics are also translated. So you'll never want to calculate this thing, but you want to know that that's what happens if you go to this linearization of the parameter. So then you can be offhand and say Bayes is okay, it's just confidence, it's reproducible. There's a little, still some remaining problems for how the Bayesians handle curve parameters. But when you think of the prior, and if you switch parameters, then you know there's a Jacobian involved. You change a prior from one parameterization, there is a Jacobian effect. So there's a log prior for what you want. And it's the log prior initially plus the Jacobian. Well, that thing's a little hard to handle, but if you think of its inverse, the derivative of beta with respect to theta, you're differentiating that kind of Taylor's expansion, two-level Taylor's expansion. The first term just gives the identity, and the second one is that W that I mentioned before, and it's n minus the half. So when you want to look at the log of the determinant, it's just the trace of the W times the theta minus not theta naught, and it's just a vector times theta minus theta naught. So that's a vector, might require a little bit of computing, calculating, but it's available. And so then you can come along and say, well, Bayes is going to be reproducible if that initial tilt vector with your prior, and then this vector that represents curvature in your initial parameterization, is equal to zero. It's sort of like if the effective curvature and the tilt and prior, if they compensate each other, then the likelihood is just a shift. In other words, the prior isn't messing up the likelihood information. If it is messing it up, you want to keep them separately or take account of them and do them in this joint way. So just trying to summarize that, a parameter can have curvature. It sounds like nonsense, a curve parameter, but it's real. And you can actually calculate that and find a linearized version of the parameter in the neighborhood of your observed MLE. Is just, well, because I've centered and standardized, it's just the identity there, but then you pick up the quadratic portion. And if you work on those standardized coordinates with things linear as well, the prior directly displaces confidence. It just takes whatever would be a confidence and moves it laterally. So you can see what it does to model information. It maybe it repeats that in some way. If it just leaves the likelihood fixed in this new parameterization, you've got something that will integrate to give confidence. So you can say that the parameter is parameter is reproducible and gives confidence if that A vector and C vector are equal. In other words, if the prior sometimes somehow is able to anticipate the curvature in the initial parameterization that you're working with. If you have a scalar interest parameter that you're interested, big scalar means it's a linear in the coordinates of the theta, then you can find the marginal posterior of that psi, and this again is a direct displacement of confidence for that component parameter, and you can pick up the bias there, or no bias if you actually did things in terms of the linear parameterization. So if you want to use a prior, you should know what the curvature R is, so you know. While you want to know what the curvature in the initial parameterization is, and you want to know what the tilt of the prior is. So what's the obvious thing? Calculate that gradient, calculate the curvature vector, and then the prior displaces your likelihood by something that's the difference between those two. So thank you, EJAS, the organizing committee, and all the support, and thanks to Bayes. It may be Bayes didn't get everything right, as some would be claimed, like nobody in statistics has got things right the first time. The people that caused the problem are the people that pack the innovators and don't try to adapt them to what revised views may come along. There's a minor addendum, but I'll only resort to that depending on the question. So thank you.